Hello and welcome to the Serious Games Podcast, all about playful methods for interactive trainings and facilitation. Let's get started.
And welcome back to the Serious Games Podcast. And today I'm really happy I am connected to the north of Poland. So I've learned that electricity is really up in the north. Actually, it should be close to the water, to the coast. And Czemek has created a lovely game, and it's very special. It's called Scrum Tale. And I know I do have a few episodes on games, serious games, teaching, reflecting, learning the the Scrum roles and methodology, etc. But this one is special because we're not building with Lego. Let me just put that right out there, right? And I'm happy because we tried to find a date to record since quite some time. So Czemek, welcome to the Serious Games Podcast.
Hello, Ilian, and hello, listeners. I'm excited that to share the story about Scrum Tale and to your listeners.
Wonderful. Well, thank you. And it is quite a story. I know, it's been like 7 years ago when you piloted, when you developed. But again, I'll let you share everything. Let's get started with my two traditional questions. Czemek, what should our listeners know about you? And how would you describe your game, Scrum Tale, to someone who's never heard about it?
Okay. I'm an engineer, so I was working at Intel for many, many years as a firmware developer. And this is a place when, maybe a little bit more. And I have a couple of other engagements. I had my own startup. I right now I have also some my consulting company. But on a daily basis, my main focus is on Dynatrace. I'm working for Dynatrace right now. Yeah, and we have created with my good friend Lech Wypychowski in 2000. We started experimenting with Scrum Tale 2017 at Intel. We were providing Scrum Agile trainings back then, and we are looking for some engaging simulation. And I was on a conference, and there were a concept. There was a concept of using of writing a story, something as a team. And I find it very inspiring. And I talk with Lech, let's create a simulation, and the product will be a story. And then we say, oh, maybe crime story would be even better. And we. We started experiment with a simple concept, with printouts, and we cut those printed card. And we experimented with the teams at Intel, and they love it. They said this was great. They also give us some hints how to improve it, and when we have the feeling that it's a really good product, we just created a web page. We invest in making it beautiful with this.
Yes, it surely is.
With this design card, with the box, with the nice board, with the nice cards, and it's how it starts.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, let's unpack everything that you said, co-creating this crime story. And I really want to not only know how the learners create the story, but also how you and facilitators out there can create learnings and impact with the game, obviously. So what's your one sentence pitch for Scrum Tale?
I would say that Scrum Tale is very engaging simulation when we have usually two teams collaboratively creating a thrilling crime story, at the same practicing Scrum, but maybe even more agile principles, and having a lot of fun and having a lot of experience and in a very engaging creative environment.
Okay, wonderful. And I know because we've talked a little bit before this recording started, there are also other use cases, but let's talk about variations later, okay? So let's start with the end in mind, obviously. What are the learning objectives, right? When would I consider using Scrumtail?
All right, it's a great question. So let me take a one step back before we jump to conclusions. And so I would like to emphasize the uniqueness of the Scrumtail. And by the way, we are using different games, different simulations, also Lego Scrum.
Yes.
And it serves for some environments, timings, and so on. But we notice that that other simulations like Lego didn't fully show the real challenges of software projects. Things like code integration, quality, and this is a gap which we saw. And it's also a reason why we wanted to create a simulation that you feel it's more authentic, and you feel like, oh, this is similar to what we observe on a daily basis. And that's why writing collaboratively crime story was a really perfect analogy. You have to be creative, as in the software development, but immediately you face the problems with integration. And when you see that, okay, this one paragraph ends and there is another paragraph, we read the story and the one paragraph is nothing to do with the previous one, because it was written by different persons in the team, and you need to integrate constantly. The same with quality. If you look at the Lego game, it's hard to say if this, you know, this bridge is high quality, low quality. It's, you know, or is this green roof on this building is right color or not? It's so easy to assess quality if you are reading crime story, all in terms of, you know, this quality of the crime story and also quality of the text in terms of grammar, punctuation. So all these technical aspects, we can say. So we can look at the quality in terms of how this product satisfies the customer needs, and also if the product is in a good, you know, technical quality.
Okay, I got you. No, you're definitely, you also describe, you know, and when you wrote about your game, you're taking away that layer, that translation layer, right? No matter if you build with Lego or with any other material, right? Then sometimes I know that it then becomes part of, the right size of the buildings, you know, and sometimes it becomes, is it, as you mentioned, is it a nice bridge or not? Is it did I use the right amount of bricks and the right colors, and where are they available, and did I have time to search them, right? So it's really removing that, and I'm curious to learn how this then speeds up, right? The writing, the building, the creation, so that we can then spend more time for, you know, reflection and experiencing and also iterating, right? Wonderful. So again, to the learning objective. So what would be, like, you know, learning about agile methodology, the principles, the roles, the artifacts and the ceremonies. What else? Is there any other learning objective that's triggered?
In fact, I didn't answer your first question, so let me continue on that. You ask about this learning of objectives, and following to what I said about the uniqueness of the Scrumtail, I must say that Scrum framework is really the second objective of the learning, mm-hmm. because what we the first objective is to give the audience the real experience how to be in the Scrum team developing the product incrementally. And experience all these agile principles, like being close to the customer. So when we have the sprint review, we read out loud the story, so everyone can really feel, inspect the product. There, we have a customer there, and the customer give immediate feedback about what he like, what he don't like. Doesn't like, and and with the combination of this not artificial, like finding the things to change, but it comes really natural. Like this paragraph is great, really good story, you know, this blood everywhere, you know, the brain on the wall. Wow, this is huge. And the next paragraph is like without any, you know, engagement, with any power. So you need to change or things like some inconsistency in names of the characters, because there are some missing communication in the team, the narration. Yes. So some part is written from the third person perspective. And suddenly someone starts to write from the first person perspective, and the customer said that needs to be changed. I prefer the third person perspective. And this, it comes really, really natural. So the group can get the real feeling in the very essence. What is really important, how it works. The group can learn the benefits of having this direct contact with the customer, understand how to be open for changing requirements, and also I can see during the training frustration of, because they have some idea, they wanted to write the crime story in certain, you know, way, in certain style, and the customer say, I don't like it, and they are frustrated, really. So there are also real emotions, so frustration, sometimes people get angry that they cannot agree on something in the team, but they are also happy and they are proud if they, at the end of the game, they can, and it is usual case, they can create a really a cool story. Some stories are really cool and really amazing, and some are just good, but in most of the cases, they are really proud of what they did, especially that in this game dynamics, you have three sprints, and usually the first sprint is total chaos. Like they start to write individually. Yeah, go on.
Yes, before you bring us through the gameplay, I have one question, because you really said, okay, look, this is an experience first serious game, and you want to, you know, evoke those emotions. Why is that so important? I mean, for learning in general.
That's a great question, and I think this is also one of the key value of Scrum Day, that it is a really, really engaging, and I think a lot of us trainers can see how it is to offer the exercise on the training, which is not engaging. And people will just do it because we are telling them to do it.
Absolutely, yes.
They are using opportunities to go to the toilet, blah, blah, blah. And they, you know. But here, I often need to stop them from writing when we have a break. And this is great, because And I can understand why. If you put into the story your own ideas, your concepts, and or adapt other, and you build your concept on top of other concepts, and you have a, and you create the story which you are identifying with, and or you know, it's a huge advantage because you, you start to care about the product, the product, and you start to behave authentically. You have some emotions, you have some, and because of that, you can remember better. You can take a much better insights, and those experience can will be your asset on a daily in the daily work. I can give you an example also. Like,
yes, go for it, go for it. And then we'll move on to the mechanics and the flow,
We have a group in Warsaw for the Warsaw Agile community. And the group created really, really good crime story. And one of the participants, she, after the workshop at home, she recorded like a audiobook out of this with you know, all this intonation, all this, and she just sent it to all the participants. It was great. I played it for my family, and they said, "Wow, this is a this is a really good crime story. Wonderful. Short, but really,
I do see a second, maybe a third use case there, right? Just helping all those writers out there to put together their stories, huh? Cemek, tell me, you already started, right? Now, here's the staging, okay? So I read, it's half a day, let's say 4 to 6 hours. You mentioned the three sprints. Before you start engaging with the learners, with the participants, what does a facilitator need to prepare if you want to play the game, right? I know there's a box, there's some cards in there. Can you just walk us through the material and the, let's say, also technical room setup that is needed?
Okay, this is a great question. So, we have a board, which is our Scrum board, when we can see story cards, when we can move story cards, just imagine usual Scrum board. We have story cards, user story cards, and there are cards like introduce character of the murderer. And you have some acceptance criteria there that, like in usual user stories, like some of them are technical, some of them are more vague. It's like in your real life. So we have a user stories. So that's our backlog. We have role cards, so people can understand the Scrum roles and also understand how this Scrum role should engage in the game. We have definition of done, of the, so what we expect to have at the end of the sprint in terms of integrated product. And we have event cards. Sometimes I use them, sometimes not. It could help the facilitator at the end, but later on you can easily skip it and just introduce things by yourself. And as I said before, the game is very flexible, so you can adapt to your style. Apart from that, we have created extension Arsontale and user story mapping. So Arsontale gives us a little bit of better kickoff of the vision of the book. When we started the game, we ask people to just start with a blank sheet of paper and just invent the crime story concept. Apart from the standard materials, we have also two extensions. One is user story mapping, which I which helped to organize the backlog a little bit. And you can assign the user story cards to the story flow, and it makes the team life easier to understand what they have, also to decide on the MVP. So this is something which I usually build on the table with by myself. And the next extension is crucial. It's Arsund Tale, and it builds the initial vision, initial theme of the crime stories. Because we find out...
So then it's already there, right? Originally, the team or the client needs to come up with that?
Yes. Since mm-hmm. we developed this extension, I always use it. You can download the posters from our website. So this is something which I just put on the walls. On those posters, you have... you have a reader persona. You have main character Olivia Larson and some description of this main character. You have the picture of the town when the story should happen. Arsund Tale, Arsund town in some Norwegian town or village. So we can feel the climate a little bit with there are some information about the town, like, you know, people usually know each other. There's a lot of gossips. They drink a lot. Yes. And, you know, there are a lot of people live from fishing. The next posters are about stories, because we have two teams and each team need to write their own separate story, but those both stories, those both books need to be in a one book series. So we explain, like, think about the Sherlock Holmes books. Every book about the Sherlock Holmes, like, it's a separate story. There is a separate murderer, a separate case, but needs to be in the same climate. You have the same main characters and blah blah blah.
Gotcha.
It's on the wall. So it took me, I don't know, 20 minutes to prepare the room, and it's ready.
And that's great. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean that's all the material. Look, I can put some pictures in the podcast, right? And of course, I'll link your website so everyone can look at, you know, what the cards look like and the board, etc. But I understand two teams, right? Is there anything else we would need you before we start the introduction of the game?
So before, when I use the simulation in my Scrum training, I put it on the very beginning. Like I just take 15 minutes, 20 minutes to introduce the basic concept of the Scrum on the flip chart, like about iterations, product increments, roles, and very simple introduction, and then we start simulation just to give people to experience Scrum, and then afterwards we can dive into more, you know, details of the framework. So
okay.
After preparation of the room and after introduction of Scrum, we divide into teams usually if it's a two team setup, because also it's possible to run it just for one team. We assign the roles, and here the real simulation starts. So I need to play the customer role, and I And I come to the stage and I say, hey, I'm John from New York, from publishing company. We have a problem because we already invested a lot of money into the new project. It will be the new book series in the Norwegian climate. We have identified the target audience. This is our persona. This is and you are the and but you have a problem because the author resigned. He has had some ideas. He left some ideas, but he resigned. And we have a tight schedule. That's why we decided to go with a group of ghostwriters. And we have we know that there is something like Scrum in IT, so we will adapt it here. And welcome, ghostwriters. Mm-hmm. You are the one. We are the best ghostwriters on the planet. You wrote the books like Harry Potter, the girl with the dragon tattoo. So people, wow, dude. So I, as a customer, introduced the business idea, why we are doing that, mm-hmm. and also and slowly go into the details of the what we about the boundaries of the project, the key vision elements which they need to follow. And I end up with the description of the vision of those two books. We have on the first posters we have a situation that in Arsund the priest were murdered and beloved, you know, everyone loved this old man, and suddenly he was found dead in the small church outside of the Arsund. So, you know, and the second case, the second book is about the town mayor, and he was found dead in the fisherman hut, hanging on the hook, terrible, you know, crime. So. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I explained that, okay, this is a skeleton of the, but you have a lot of freedom to create all the details. You need to think about the customer, about the target audience. And I said, I will be there for you. Here is my phone number. I'm leaving this phone number for to product owner, to product owners. I can explain why we have the two product owners in the setup, so they can call me anytime. And I say, I need to fly to Hawaii to another business meeting, but, you know, see you on the first sprint review. So this is an intro. Like, they also can ask some questions about what I like. And so this is also happening.
Right. And how long does that take? I mean, what is a good...
Five-ish minutes, 10 maybe. Okay. So it's quite quick.
And any typical questions that groups ask? I mean, generalizing over 6 years, but what are typical questions that maybe I ask? Two questions. What is a typical question that you would answer? And are there also some questions at this stage that you do not answer?
There are some questions about the concept, like how bloody the story could be, or you expect some kind of sense of humor inside, or just need to be this kind of, or sometimes I often said that just be, when you will be working on the vision, just be careful about those delicate topics, because you can unintentionally, you know, hurt someone's feelings in case of, I don't know, religion or, you know, this kind of things.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay.
But we also, when I spot it later on, I just have this kind of message from the customer perspective, like, say, hey, what do you think if you find this on the bookshelf and you read it? And they immediately have some reflection. So usually at this stage, there are not so much questions.
Okay. And
because this question starts on the next phase. So I step back from this customer role and go back to facilitator role and say, hey, you have 20 minutes to gather next to the flip chart, to the posters, and your goal is to came up with a high-level vision of the product. And there are three main elements you need to figure out. Who is the murderer? Mm-hmm. What's the motive? And how Olivia Larson figure out who committed the crime? So all those three key elements constitutes the key elements of the book. If they have it, the rest is just details which they can come up during the implementation.
Got you. And obviously this is done collaboratively with all teams in the room, right? Because it's a shared product vision.
In fact, two teams are working on that separately because those books are most of the things happen in the book. But when they finish, I ask them to explain the whole group what they came up with, so the both teams can understand. And this is a moment when they align. So it's very often it comes natural, like, oh, we had a concept that you know, that someone from the other book is so we can somehow connect those stories, for example, or they ask which story should come first in terms of time or things like that.
Gotcha. So product vision and then a short alignment between the two teams.
Yes.
What happens then?
And then we have a product backlog refinement. So I give the story card to product owners. So let me shortly explain why we have two product owners, why usually we would like to have one. It's just because of the dynamics of the simulation. The time boxes are short. And it would be impossible for one product owner to like keep track of the whole group in such so we explain that usually it could be just one product owner, but for sake of learning Scrum on the team's level, we are using two product owners, but we are also trying to add those cross team elements, collaboration elements on top of that.
Okay.
So going back to the refinement, the product owners gets story cards, and I also, as a facilitator, I always give the goal for the next phase. And the goal is you need to get familiar with what you have in the backlog. You need to prioritize. You need to decide which you would like to develop. You don't need to develop all of them. Using the board with the story mapping, you need to arrange by priorities at least some of them. And you need to decide on MVP, which stories you need to create to have this first minimal viable product version. And that's all. And they just read those cards, they figure out what's there, and arrange the backlog on the tables.
Got you. So you always, you know, again, with that facilitator hat, you give a little short intro and what's happening next, which materials to use and how to proceed. But then obviously you would also time box this, right?
Yes.
So how long would this refinement phase then last?
Around 15 minutes.
Okay, about 15 minutes. Great. So I could imagine, and again, let's then review the phases and then how the learnings are involved there. But discussions going on, you tell them, okay, 50 minutes, 5 more minutes, you know, and then time is up. My backlog is somewhat ordered and somewhat agreed in the team. What happens next?
Okay, so usually they have backlog somehow ordered. I can reveal a little bit of insights of from the of the facilitation of the game here.
Please, yes. Mm-hmm.
So for you can decide as facilitator how much you would like to intervene during the game. And I see two main factors, like maturity of the audience and the time. So if you have if you have newbies, like people who don't know nothing, don't know Scrum at all, they don't understand the roles fully. So it's that you can more often intervene in a moment and say, "Hey, I see this is happening. This is how usually we can deal with that." And if we have, and usually in the newbies group, we have this Scrum Master role. So you can say, "Hey, if I would be Scrum Master, I would try this and this and this." And so you can stop the group. Like, "Hey, let me pause you for a moment. I pause the timer." And you can, that's why I said the second factor is time. So you can easily pause the game and explain something in the moment and go on. You can also just observe, take notes, and it works pretty well, especially for teams who work for some time in Scrum and they just would like to... they would like to see more at this, how to raise the bar, what we can improve still in terms of how we work as a team. And then it's better to leave the observations because they very often came with those observations first.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
So that was a short, I can go back a little bit.
Oh, absolutely. But I think it's important, right? And you know, this is really why I love having a conversation about a game, because on the one hand, of course, we have the material, we have the guide. And yes, a phase should, you know, backlog refinement should last 15 minutes, right? But especially what you said, depending on your audience, the learners, also depending on, you know, the flow and how they get into this and how it is presented and how much pre-knowledge they have, you deliberately, decide to either intervene or to not to intervene. You deliberately decide to do a mini debrief or an in-game debrief or not. Or as you mentioned, right, just to take notes and take it in. What's happening, and then reflect back at a later stage, right? And I think that's always important that we facilitators, generalizing here, are aware that we can do that. We are allowed to do that. But on the other hand, by offering such an intervention, this already has an impact also on the learning, right? So it's a decision we have to make. It's an in-game decision we have to make. All right, so backlog refined. How did they start writing the story? Is that the next phase?
Almost. after refinement, we have just one refinement during the game.
Yes. Okay.
And then we have three sprints. Each sprint starts with 7 minutes planning. Then the group have 2 days. 7 minutes each for writing.
Okay.
And in between the days, we have a short daily stand-up just to show them how it works and stop them from doing and synchronize a little bit during the work.
Okay,
so in each sprint, they have 14 minutes of writing. And it's silent. Very often it's like you are hearing the typing because they are writing the book on laptops, on Google Docs or any other shared document.
Gotcha. So it's really co-writing, right? Multiple keyboards connected to that dock, and then they engage and they start in writing. Can you give us an example how it really starts? I mean, maybe what's on that backlog and how they then just, you know, get into that document and writing mode? Is it just that they start and say, let's do a brain dump, I have some ideas? Or is it a lot of discussion before they do type the first letter?
In fact, user stories organize the work a lot. So mm-hmm. when I introduced the sprint planning, I said your goal is to decide what you want to deliver as a team and choose the user stories and discuss the tactics of approaching this work. Who should do what? How to organize this work in the team? Do you want to work alone? You would like to pair or choose another? So you have a full freedom, but you need to. This 7 minutes is for choosing the work and deciding how to approach to this this job, and they usually start with picking their individual stories, like, oh, I will write this part, I will write this part, mm-hmm. and they start writing because they have concrete element of the book written on the, like, phone call with the new case for detective, and it needs mm-hmm. to be dialogue. So usually it's like a starting point. So someone start to write that Olivia Larson lie in the bed and get a call from an old friend from police station, and he said, "Oh, Olivia, I'm glad you're here back in arson from Oslo. We have a serious case here, like our beloved priest were murdered." So this kind of, and so we have after the sprint we have this kind of parts of the story.
Gotcha. Okay. So, how do you introduce the daily? So 7 minutes are over. I mean, I can hardly imagine that the groups are all done with they wanted to deliver. So it's like, oh my God, 7 minutes are already up. The first day is already gone.
Yes.
What happens at the end of the first day? Or the daily then.
It takes a couple of seconds to for them to stop writing, but standing daily helps. So when they need to stand up, it's much harder to write at the same time. Usually after the first sprint, they are, oh my gosh. Oh my gosh, we are, you know, like it's a mess, and we can observe that mess because after the work is done, we have a sprint review, and the customer is back, and we read out loud the books. Usually, not so much content after the first sprint, and they can easily spot the problems, and usually those two main issues in majority of cases is integrity, integration, and quality. So they can spot pretty well written parts of the book and some not. So they can also spot like their skills. That, oh, some people have a good writing skill, some not. And we need to also take care about, put much more effort to integrate the whole, and also in terms of quality. So they have a lot of learning after the first sprint.
Oh, for sure, for sure.
So after this presentation of the product, I always give them a couple of minutes to organize the backlog, to decide which stories are accepted by product owner. Also during the sprint review, I ask to point someone to in the team to capture all the feedback, all the bugs or the problems, ideas. And after sprint review, we have a 7-minute retrospective, so they can talk about those learnings and findings.
Okay, after a sprint interview, so three sprints, and then there's planning, 2 days, a daily in between, a review, and a retro.
Yes.
And the review is also 7 minutes. Did you mention that?
No, no time box, because it depends. We just we just need to focus on the. It's one of the crucial. It's a very crucial moment. When we reflect on the book you would like to spot, and I don't want we don't want to rush this moment, because it's a really reflection moment.
Gotcha.
But the other events are time boxed.
Great. And you mentioned, you know, you know, gradually, and at the very end, they're happy and proud, and
after the first sprint, usually.
Not after the first one, but then after the third one, right?
Yeah.
But we can imagine, right? And I really want to understand a little bit, what are your observations, like from sprint one all the way to sprint three? What are reflections that are emerging? Of course, we cannot generalize all the groups, right? But what are, like, you know, the top three things that you feel are happening during sprint one or at the end, or when they realize, ooh, integration is really not going to work and the quality is very different from what we created. And that's true from the teams, I understand, but then also from the team members, right? As you mentioned, they slowly get into the flow or experience and see the skills that they bring to the table, again, in crime writing. But what are other learnings or reflections that emerge?
That's a good question. And I think you mentioned about, you know, already a couple of them. Usually first sprint end up with the very chaotic parts of the story. They took those learnings. In the second sprint, usually they start to pay more attention to cross-checking those elements. Very often they start to work in pairs, or they physically sit closer to each other. So if the one person is writing this part of the book and the another person is writing the next day, let's sit next to each other so we can easily, you know, consult on the way, and we can. So all these things happens naturally. Sometimes they say, we need to have a special role integrator. And usually it's a person with the lowest writing skills. So sometimes someone said, I'm not so good at writing, but I can take care about the whole. And you will be writing, I will be looking and spotting those gaps and letting you know what needs to be changed. Or so they invented by themselves. So at the result of the second sprint is you in majority of cases much better. So we start to see a real story. Sometimes they even have some final stage already shaped a little bit. And the third sprint usually is a really good product. So they polish everything. So they do not add so much new stuff. The majority of stuff is added during the second sprint. And then the third sprint is really ending up usually with a really good crime story.
Okay.
Also, when you observe the team, first sprint, everyone works separately. Second sprint, there is a lot of movement in the team, and a lot of things happening. Third sprint is much more silent and calm, because they start to adapt to the framework, they start to feel the timing, So we really can see we can spot. Observing the teams in this a simulation that framework organize the work. And and the framework is a tool for risk management, like this, all these things. We have no manager here in this simulation.
Okay, so then you would literally unpack, again, you mentioned you can play this with a different maturity of teams and pre-knowledge of agile, you know, frameworks, etc. But then you would go back, you know, after the last increment was delivered and there was a hopefully a little celebration, you would then go back and reveal how, let's say, the principles, the ceremonies, the values are reflected in their experience. Tell us a little bit about how do you do that? I mean, how do you do that? Is that a conversation that you have, or do you have a specific game to elicitate and to extract that? Or what's your approach? Let's say they know little about Scrum, and now they experience, they created a story, they thought, oh, that's even fun. And, you know, they especially what you just reflected, they say, yeah, we got more quiet, and it was great to align. How do you build upon that experience?
Yeah, it's a good question, and this is a one of the key moments in the simulation. So at the end we have the brief, and I like to reserve at least 30-40 minutes for that, and I usually start with a very open question: what surprised you? What did you learn? And usually they are surprised that they managed to create such a story. And if we have a group of people, which sometimes happen when don't know each other, they were surprised about results that they created a really, really good product, and they are surprised that in this very short time they become a high-performing team at the end. They feel like they are really, really high-performing team because the dynamic is so so dense that if you look from this perspective how Scrum Day builds a team, it's a really, really like shortening the time of and giving the experience how it is to work in a self-organized, high-performing team. So this is a usual surprise. Okay. And then they say they learn how important is collaboration with customer. They usually have a reflection about importance of inspecting the product, reflecting how the team works during retrospective. So when they came up with their own thoughts, observations, I have a couple of questions about the roles, question about emergent leadership, question about if they spot some disengaged team members, about the roles. I also encourage to ask for the feedback. So for example, if we have a person in PO role or Scrum Master, I encourage, if you would like to hear your individual feedback, how the team is, you know, what team appreciate in what you have done for them, or what where's the gaps, if you want to just ask for the feedback. And people often offer this feedback. And we can start from that and have a very interesting discussion about the roles, sometimes even. So and one more thing which I'm I usually do during the brief, I just showing the 12 agile principles and just go one by one and ask them, have you experienced that? Yes. And majority of of 12 Agile principles are very, very vivid in the Scrum mm-hmm. days. So it's really like you can really experience like close collaboration to the customer, like and others.
Simplicity, yeah, absolutely. Simplicity.
Simplicity is one of the key. Like,
yes, because
sometimes we have a really, really super paragraph with a lot of details, a lot of text, but the whole book is like far from the completion. Like, and they have
absolutely
maybe
Yes, and I also want to just focus again on. And you bring, you know, learning about the agile methodology, and you also mentioned the term, you know, high performing team, right? But also not only experiencing in-game collaboration and communication and clear goals and roles, right? But then, of course, using that as a stepstone to discuss, okay, how is it in our real life and day to day, and then also reflecting on, well, you know, maybe the roles aren't as clear, right? Or maybe they are not a team, right? But then they can, you know, reflect on, okay, who do I work with, right? And where's my accepted leadership? Yes. Okay. Wow. So in total, let me just recap a little bit. So we have obviously the three sprints, and then you said new time box for the product review. Yep. And then we have that. I see 14, 30. Yeah. I mean, with the, okay. So 4 to 6 hours is already a very fair a total, right? For the Scrum tail. Before we go into those, let's say, extensions or other observations, I really wanted to ask you, if I now facilitate Scrum Tail, watch outs that you as the game developer want to share with our listeners? Where is an important moment in the flow? Where is an important mechanic or pitfall, you know, that is deliberately in the game, or as we all know, the famous quote, you know, that the game is deliberately broken and the learners need to fix it. So where are a few things that you just want to, you know, highlight for our listeners?
We didn't introduce too much of this deliberately introduce pitfalls. We have mm-hmm. one, which is really specifically added. When the team is working on the product during the first sprint, we approach to the product owners and say, hey, we have signed a contract with IKEA, and there will be a product placement. We will get the money for a product placement. You need to mention about 3 IKEA products and price them for high quality and low cost. And imagine usually product owners just accept that. Customer wants, so let's let's do it. And there is a lot of fun during second sprint review, because imagine you have a really nicely written paragraph. You have a body lying on the floor, blood, crime story, really well written. And they introduce the IKEA. So right now the body is lying on the sofa. You have a name, which is very comfortable and very cheap.
Yeah.
And it turns out a really good fragment into the crap. And I asked them, what do you think about it? What do you think as a team about introduction? And they said, the intention is to show that the product owner doesn't need to accept everything from the custom, but think about the quality, the book, and the business value of the product, and sometimes also start discussing with the customer if something needs to be introduced, how it will impact the book. We have usually during the sprint review, I as a customer say, we need to renegotiate this agreement with IKEA, or you find a way to introduce it not in such a way that you will ruin the whole story.
Yes. Absolutely. And again, we've all been there, right? The customer asks for an additional deliverable and we take it in, right? And we want to make it happen, right? Multiple reasons. And then at the very end, exactly what you said, you know, we realize, oh, wow, this had a major impact on the overall product or delivery or increment. And we just need to, I'll find a better way to deal with that. So that product placement.
Fun part of the story that this concept was introduced by one of the manager at Intel. We have a workshop at this time when we just experiment, and this manager plays the customer role, and yes. He went to the random developers and asked to add this IKEA just to play with them, even not for Wonderful. Not to, to product owners, and they just delivered it.
Yes, they did. And
product owners were surprised during the sprint review what's about this IKEA stuff in the story.
Yes, yes. So, tell me, that's one of the event cards, right?
It's one of the user product story card.
Oh, it's one of the user story. Yes, can you just differentiate? Because I probably didn't get right the difference between the user stories and the event card. So, the event card is literally the Scrum event. Explaining what's happening in the next phase, or just walk me through so that we clearly know what's in the package game.
Okay, sorry for confusion.
No worries.
Event cards are laying on the board, and every time the new event starts, like planning or work or sprint review or this vision storybook vision meeting, we have an instruction. What will happen? What's the goal? A little bit explanation of the... So it's like event cards help you to lead the team throughout the game. It's like a part of instruction. How to behave? Gotcha. What's important? Yes. That's why I said at the beginning, if you know the game and you do it for several... You can easily just tell the group and you can completely remove the event cards. You can also ask the team to self-organize, and at the beginning of the event, you can ask Scrum Masters in the teams to read those cards for everyone. So it could work pretty well when you need to stop the team from, you know, talking and to grab a little bit attention.
Yes. So there is also, you know, content around Scrum, you know, in the game, so that they can, as you said, you know, self-organize, self-facilitate, or that you as a, you know, facilitator can obviously use that to guide then the group. Wonderful. I know, again, I guess right now, you know, 2025, it's clear you also do have an online version that probably has a couple of, additional logistical points in managing the groups and obviously going into those breakout rooms to understand, you know, when they need your help and where they need more guidance and where things are going right or not so right. I would love to just ask you for maybe one or two memorable moments while playing Scrum Tale. I mean, was there a situation that was, you know, so unique or special that you would like to share with us? Just one out of those, not millions, but thousands.
Let's take one, one example. I already said I was surprised when when the group delivered such a great book that one of the participant recorded the audiobook out of it. I really like the moment when at the end of the third sprint, when I see that everything is much you know, well organized, like a well-oiled machine, and I like to see that the group is proud of what they delivered.
Yes.
But wonderful. I also have a couple of pitfalls. If you are facilitating the Scrum tail, there are two things you need to pay attention to. One is when you have a workshop for not native speakers and the quality of language is not so high. So I have one group like that, and it was quite hard to go through the game because of the language barrier. And that workshop didn't well pretty well. It went okay, but not so well.
Yes. And how did you solve it? I mean, I was just imagining. Yeah, that's an interesting point. Like to be as inclusive as possible, right? And then there's a language barrier. How did you solve it? Could they write in their
they start to mother use tongue? Google Translator.
Yes.
It's okay, but at the same time, it's like disturbing a little bit. You need to copy and paste. And also it's harder to spot those quality issues because, you know, when you just copy the you already have corrected some things.
Interesting.
It could be difficult because you need to, you're working by language here, and those minimum language skills must be present.
And I also just had an idea, you know, obviously when you're using a machine to complete things, translations, or even the text, you know, one could probably go quickly into some LLM and have a, you know, crime story with those requirements being produced. But then it takes ownership, right? I mean, it's not fully yours anymore, right? You're not so connected to your creation anymore, right? Because someone else did something. Actually, a black box did something that you don't know, and it feels right, but sometimes it's really wrong, right?
I agree with you, and it brings us to the second thing you need to like pay attention to is a pitfall when the group has really low writing skills and in terms of creativity and inventing. If there are no one who will lead or a couple of people who will lead the writing, and it happens to me once, and it just end up with not so cool story. We still have a lot of insights, a lot of learnings, but you know we lack this joy of delivering something really cool, and this is I really like I miss that, and here it comes what you said, LLMs, ChatGPT, and other. I'm still struggling how to use it. At the beginning, I during the workshop, I just said you cannot use it because I just. But later on, I start to experiment and I say, you can use it just for small paragraphs. You can use it just for ideation, like your assistant, but you can just put the whole bunch of text. And I was surprised that it was not so bad. People have some additional assistance, but they use it in this small scale, like on this, you know, rewriting the paragraph or inventing some ideas. I didn't see any anyone trying to, you know, put the prompt, please write for me the crime story about blah blah blah, and yes. And just copy and paste the whole. But it's a risk. I don't know how to react if something like that happen on the yes. training.
Yes. Well, I
Yeah, I recently even wrote a blog post about using ChatGPT with my own observations, so you can find some my thoughts there.
Yes, absolutely. I'll link all of the sources, the website, the blog post, but then, of course, also some pictures of the game. It really feels like we could talk for another half an hour, but I know our time box is ending. I just want to close with maybe two more questions, and thank you for sharing. What is your ultimate facilitation tip? Okay, now this is an all experience first serious game. It doesn't have to be for Scrum Tail only, but if I want to teach with a serious game, what is your ultimate tip for the facilitators out there?
Just try it. Just try it. Just imagine that you are a publisher from New York. You have a bunch of ghostwriters. You have a backlog, and just try it. So if you put you in those shoes, and I have a lot of trainers, friends around the world using Scrum Tail, and I find that they are using Scrum Tail a little bit differently, like they are adapting the game to their own style, and I think this is a so just try it. Don't overthink a setup. Yeah. Try with your friends. Offer this. Oh, try with your Agile community. So and if you're experienced Agile coach, Scrum Master, I don't know. Product manager, Agile product manager, or it's easy to because the main value from facilitator is this experience from your from your field, and you can you can just introduce those learnings and combine it with this real-time experience of the yes. group. The good information is that after so many years, we heard from different trainers. Oh, it seems it looks interesting. I would like to try, but you know, I don't want to risk, you know, paying almost, you know, 500 euros for the box version without trying it out.
For the full set with the box and the cards and everything that you explained. Gotcha.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we finally decided to go with the do-it-yourself version. So
yes.
With the little investment, you can download the whole content, all the cards, facilitator guide. You will have an access to all the extensions and you can print it out. Try it for yourself, and if you like it, you can later on, if you decide to have a really good-looking and this, you know, beautiful game with beautiful cards, you can buy the box Wonderful. Version, and you we will deduct the price of do-it-yourself version from the box. So. Yeah.
Wonderful. Yes. Thank you for sharing that. And again, we will put everything we need to you know, get started or to have an even deeper look now that you know we've spoken to you into the show notes. But again, I want to emphasize what you said, Cemek. Like the game is and the game mechanics and the story and you know. How it flows is the one thing. Obviously, the participants will always be different, but also the facilitators are different, right? And everyone, you know, leads differently or frames or has, you know, different pre-knowledge. You know, also the facilitators are differently equipped with what they're aiming for and how they challenge the group and how they adapt to what's happening in the moment, right? And of course, we all make different decisions in-game and after afterwards. So it's definitely a unique situation every time. Wow. I just have to say thank you so much for sharing the details of ScrumTail and a little bit about the history and your observations and giving us also a little bit of an insight on, you know, what were the moments where you and Lick, right, and decided to develop other parts. I also know that it is available in different languages, so it's not only in English. I written it also in Italian, Polish, and Czech, and in German. So, you know, it's not only that our facilitators need to do the translation work if they want to dive in and experiment. Wow. Cemek, is there anything we did not cover in this hour? I think it's a little bit more than an hour.
Just if you are a facilitator, just watch out that one of the most difficult thing during the facilitation is to stop people from writing. So when you have a break and you have a, I very often need to change the mode of document from editing to viewing because it's really hard to stop them from writing.
Wonderful.
Thanks a lot for invitation. It was a great pleasure for me to talk about ScrumTail in your podcast. So I'm active on LinkedIn, so I encourage everyone, if you have further questions or you would like to have some facilitation tips or whatever, just write to me on LinkedIn or email us hello at scrumtail.com. We are replying and helping people to use ScrumTail.
Cemek, thank you so much. Likewise, it was a pleasure of talking to you. I'll put all the emails and links in the show notes. And thank you to all our listeners. And if you want to become a guest on the Serious Games Podcast, you can just email me directly at guest@seriousgamespodcast.com. Bye-bye.
You can reach us at hello@keylearning.net. We're looking forward to your suggestions, comments, and feedback.